You didn't swallow any? I ask him. He shakes his head. You? Guess I'd be dead by now if I did, I say. I can see his lips moving in reply, but I can't hear him, over the roar of the crowd in the Capitol that they're playing live over the speakers. The hovercraft materializes overhead, and two ladders drop, only there's no way I'm letting go of PETA. I keep one arm around him as I help him up, and we each place a foot on the first rung of the ladder. The electric current freezes us in place, and this time I'm glad because I'm not really sure PETA can hang on for the whole ride. And since my eyes were looking down, I can see that while our muscles are immobile, nothing is preventing the blood from draining out of PETA's leg. Sure enough, the minute the door closes behind us and the current stops, he slumps to the floor unconscious. My fingers are still gripping the back of his jacket so tightly that when they take him away, it tears, leaving me with a fistful of black fabric. Doctors in sterile white, masked and gloved, already prepped to operate, go into action. PETA's so pale and still on a silver table, tubes and wires springing out of him every which way. And for a moment, I forget we're out of the games, and I see the doctors as just one more threat, one more pack of mutts designed to kill him. Petrified, I lunge for him, but I'm caught. I'm thrust back into another room, and a glass door seals between us. I pound on the glass, screaming my head off. Everyone ignores me, except for some Capitol attendant who appears behind me and offers me a beverage. I slump down on the floor, my face against the door, staring uncomprehendingly at the crystal glass in my hand. Icy cold, filled with orange juice, a straw with a frilly white collar. How wrong it looks in my bloody, filthy hand with its dirt-caked nails and scars. My mouth waters at the smell, but I place it carefully on the floor, not trusting anything so clean and pretty. Through the glass, I see the doctors working feverishly on PETA, their brows creased in concentration. I see the flow of liquids, pumping through the tubes, watch a wall of dials and lights that mean nothing to me. I'm not sure, but I think his heart stops twice. It's like being home again, when they bring in the hopelessly mangled person from the mine explosion, or the woman in her third day of labor, or the famished child struggling against pneumonia, and my mother and Prim. They wear that same look on their faces. Now is the time to run away to the woods, to hide in the trees until the patient is long gone, and in another part of the seam, the hammers make the coffin. But I'm held here both by the hovercraft walls and the same force that holds the loved ones of the dying. How often I've seen them, ringed around our kitchen table, and I've thought, why don't they leave? Why do they stay to watch? And now I know. It's because you have no choice. I startle when I catch someone staring at me from only a few inches away, and then realize it's my own face reflecting back in the glass. Wild eyes, hollow cheeks, my hair in a tangled mat. Rabid, feral, mad. No wonder everyone is keeping a safe distance from me. The next thing I know, we've landed back on the roof of the training center, and they're taking PETA but leaving me behind the door. I start hurling myself against the glass, shrieking. And I think I just catch a glimpse of pink hair. It must be Effie. It has to be Effie coming to my rescue when the needle jabs me from behind. When I wake, I'm afraid to move at first. The entire ceiling glows with the soft yellow light, allowing me to see that I'm in a room containing just my bed. No doors, no windows are visible. The air smells of something sharp and antiseptic. My right arm has several tubes that extend into the wall behind me. I'm naked, but the bedclothes are soothing against my skin. I tentatively lift my left hand above the cover. Not only has it been scrubbed clean, the nails are filed in perfect ovals. The scars from the burns are less prominent. I touch my cheek, my lips, the puckered scar above my eyebrow, and I'm just running my fingers through my silken hair when I freeze. Apprehensively, I ruffle the hair by my left ear. No, It wasn't an illusion. I can hear again. I try to sit up, but some sort of wide, restraining band around my waist keeps me from rising more than a few inches. The physical confinement makes me panic, and I'm trying to pull myself up and wriggle my hips through the band when a portion of the wall slides open, and in steps the red-headed Avox girl carrying a tray. The sight of her calms me, and I stop trying to escape. I want to ask her a million questions, but I'm afraid any familiarity would cause her harm. Obviously, I am being closely monitored. She sets the tray across my thighs and presses something that raises me to a sitting position. While she adjusts my pillows, I risk one question. I say it out loud, as clearly as my rusty voice will allow, so nothing will seem secretive. Did PETA make it? She gives me a nod, and as she slips a spoon into my hand, I feel the pressure of friendship. I guess she did not wish me dead after all. And PETA has made it. Of course he did. With all their expensive equipment here. Still, I hadn't been sure until now. As the Avox leaves, the door closes noiselessly after her, and I turn hungrily to the tray. A bowl of clear broth, a small serving of applesauce, and a glass of water. This is it, I think grouchily. Shouldn't my homecoming dinner be a little more spectacular? But I find it's an effort to finish the spare meal before me. My stomach seems to have shrunk to the size of a chestnut, and I have to wonder how long I've been out because I had no trouble eating a fairly sizable breakfast that last morning in the arena. There's usually a lag of a few days between the end of the competition and the presentation of the victor so that they can put the starving, wounded mess of a person back together again. Somewhere, Cinna and Portia will be creating our wardrobes for the public appearances. Haymitch and Effie will be arranging the banquet for our sponsors, reviewing the questions for our final interviews. Back home, District 12 is probably in chaos as they try to organize the homecoming celebrations for PETA and me, given that the last one was close to 30 years ago. Home. Prim and my mother. Gail. Even the thought of Prim's scruffy old cat makes me smile. Soon I will be home. I want to get out of this bed, to see PETA and Cinna, to find out more about what's been going on. And why shouldn't I? I feel fine. But as I start to work my way out of the band, I feel a cold liquid seeping into my vein from one of the tubes and almost immediately lose consciousness. This happens on and off for an indeterminate amount of time. My waking, eating, and even though I resist the impulse to try to escape the bed, being knocked out again. I seem to be in a strange, continual twilight. Only a few things register. The red-headed Avox girl has not returned since the feeding. My scars are disappearing, and do I imagine it? Or do I hear a man's voice yelling? Not in the capital accent, but in the rougher cadences of home. And I can't help having a vague, comforting feeling that someone is looking out for me. Then finally, the time arrives when I come to, and there's nothing plugged into my right arm. The restraint around my middle has been removed, and I am free to move about. I start to sit up, but am arrested by the sight of my hands. The skin's perfection. Smooth and glowing. Not only are the scars from the arena gone, but those accumulated over years of hunting have vanished without a trace. My forehead feels like satin, and when I try to find the burn on my calf, there's nothing. I slip my legs out of bed, nervous about how they will bear my weight, and find them strong and steady. Lying at the foot of the bed is an outfit that makes me flinch. It's what all of us tributes wore in the arena. I stare at it as if it had teeth until I remember that, of course, this is what I will wear to greet my team. I'm dressed in less than a minute and fidgeting in front of the wall where I know there's a door even if I can't see it when suddenly it slides open. I step into a wide, deserted hall that appears to have no other doors on it, but it must. And behind one of them must be PETA. Now that I'm conscious and moving, I'm growing more and more anxious about him. He must be all right, or the AVOX girl wouldn't have said so. But I need to see him for myself.